on the road or off-road, Chevy Silverado is built for tough performance in any condition. Hit the road in a new Silverado pickup. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for a dealer near you. Chevy Silverado, official truck partner of the Chicago Bears.
Welcome to the show, everybody. This is Rick Kogan. The show's After Hours. That's the voice of Frank Sinatra that you'll hear periodically throughout the show. It seems to me these days, sadly, that every day there is a new face of evil on the television set, on the front pages of newspapers, if you still read newspapers. There's a lot of tragedy in the world, a lot of killing. The face of evil, when I think of it, will always, always be the horrifying, that ugly, almost deformed face of Richard Speck, who 50 years ago this month strangled and killed seven nurses on the south side of Chicago. The book, The Crime of the Century, Richard Speck and the Murders That Shocked a Nation, is written by an old friend of mine named Dennis Brio and a new friend of mine, Bill Martin. Bill was the prosecutor in the case. Bill, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Russ.
My pleasure. I read this book when it initially came out back in, I think, 95. It is fresh. It is new. You have tons of new information in here. I got to ask you, before we get into the whole ugly life of Richard Speck, you said before the show, you said that writing the book was almost harder than trying the case. It was different, but how was it hard?
Reliving the tragedy and studying it in so much detail, word by word and line by line, and tying it all together to see the whole tapestry of this monstrous deed.
Well, you were a relatively young prosecutor, 29 years old.
Yes.
You tried to be in your law career before becoming a state's attorney. You had tried to become a public defender, didn't you?
I sure did.
Why?
I was always for the underdog.
Yeah.
In college, and especially in law school, and I met with the public defender four times, and he never invited me to join his staff.
Which was pretty stupid of him, because he wound up as the attorney on the other side in the Speck trial, did he not?
He did, but I never reminded him that he didn't hire me.
This thing, when did you, Bill Martin, when did you first hear of the slain women on the south side?
On the morning of July 14th, Thursday, 1966, I heard it on the news as I was driving to 26th Street for regular round of courtroom work, and my immediate thoughts were, number one, either this guy's going to get away, or number two, because they had no clues at that point, he's never going to be taken alive, because by that time, had gotten to know an awful lot of Chicago police officers. And it struck me that Speck himself wouldn't want to be taken alive.
He did. I remember it so distinctly, and your book brought it all back to me. And ladies and gentlemen, this book is one of the finest true crime books ever written. I'm telling you that the updated version has a lot of new stuff, but even the old version was a great book. Speck sort of holed up at the Star Hotel. He tried to, that noise you're hearing is tornado stuff, not to worry. Just get someplace safe. When you first, Bill Martin, when you first set eyes on him, where was he?
He was in an operating room at the
county,
county,
right?
Hospital.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you walked in there, and did you speak to him at the time?
Well, the first time I laid eyes on him, he was under and being operated on by Dr. Leroy Smith to suture some wounds in his left elbow and his right wrist.
He sort of tried. Do you think he genuinely tried to kill himself?
The wound on his right wrist was very superficial. There was an initial thought that the wound on his left elbow had hit an artery, but it did not. So they both turned out to be very superficial wounds.
Did you have a conversation with him, or was he sort of out of it at the time?
He was absolutely unconscious at the time. First time I ever spoke to him was the following morning about 6 a.m. when we had moved him from Cook County Hospital to Cook County Jail Hospital, although we told the press that was there in very large numbers.
Oh, yeah.
That we were going to keep him in Cook County Hospital. And meanwhile, we got an ambulance out of the basement to get him to more secure facilities at Cook County Jail.
Now, Bill Martin, co-author of The Crime of the Century with Dennis Brio, you must have been working during those first 2 weeks, 20 hours a day on this thing, were you not?
Pretty close to it, yes.
Was there any guarantee? I mean, you were not the state's attorney. You were not even the assistant state's attorney. Was there any thought in your mind that, well, you're just going to help with this case, that you're not going to be the lead prosecutor? Did you know that? When did you know that?
I really never thought about who was going to be lead prosecutor.
Yeah, it was not an ego thing. It was
it was more important justice. To start assembling the case as quickly as possible, which started after he was arrested at 1 a.m. at the county hospital. And I was preparing the case from 2 a.m. till 6 in my office when the detective said, he's conscious at the jail. Why don't we walk over and see if he's willing to give a statement? So we walked over, and the policeman said, hi, Dick, how are you? And he didn't say anything, and I said, Dick, my name is Bill Martin. I'm an assistant state's attorney, and these are police officers who are assigned to your case. And all he said was, water, water.
Oh, my God.
So I knew at that point that he had been administered Demerol and morphine, and he was still obviously under his influence. And the last thing I wanted to do was
take
a statement
from
that was drug-induced.
Wow. We have to take a break. I'm spending this entire hour with Bill Martin, who's the lead prosecutor in The Crime of the Century. That is the name of his book, recently reissued in paperback with a ton of new material. We're going to get back and talk about, again, for me, and I'm supposing a generation of Chicagoans, the face of Richard Speck is the face of evil, even as we're confronted with new faces of evil every day. We'll be back in a moment. That's Frank Sinatra. I'm Rick Kogan, and my guest is William Martin, the man who prosecuted Richard Speck, his new book. It's the updated version of a book written 20-some years ago, called The Crime of the Century, Richard Speck and the Murders That Took Place. I was just talking to Bill about the first time he ever laid eyes on Speck and met him. Bill, when did you must have very early on realized that there was an eyewitness survivor to this savage, savage tragedy. When did you meet Corazon Amaral?
I met Corazon Amaral after she had been taken to the hospital where she was a nurse and put in a room. And thanks to Look magazine, it had given free plane tickets to her mother and her cousin.
The Philippines.
From the Philippines to come in, not with a guarantee they could get a picture of a reunion, but hoping they could. It turned out they did not.
Right.
They gave us two more witnesses to protect.
You know, one of the highlights of this book is the thread of the media and what the media tried to do. They offered her book deals. You, however, were warned by doctors that she was not likely to go into a sort of lapse into psychosis, but it was possible, right?
Very definitely. One psychiatrist in particular, upon whom I had great, great faith, and I thought his reaction would be, don't mollycoddle her, make her work. And when I went to see him and told him what had happened, he said, you cannot be too kind to this young woman. If you're not careful, she will lapse into a psychosis, and you're going to lose your witness. Don't have her go back to work. She's afraid to work because she's not sure of herself.
Sure, sure. So you basically had her staying in the Moraine Hotel in Highland Park for a while. You got her away from all the media and all the attention and all of that, right?
Yeah, in effect, we kidnapped her with her consent.
Yeah.
And her mother and her cousin, and took them from the far southeast side of Chicago on the Indiana border through Highland Park on the Wisconsin border, and registered under assumed names, where they had a swimming pool, a series of rooms, a suite, brought Oriental food in for them.
Sure. Now, I would think you obviously were unbelievably sympathetic to her because you knew what she lived through. What did you make of her at first? Was she a frightened young woman? Was she traumatized?
I would say that she was not traumatized. Huh. She's the most courageous person I have ever encountered. She was very brave in what she did to survive. And afterwards, she was determined to be the person who was going to be able to convict the man who murdered her roommates and colleagues.
And friends.
And dear friends.
One of the hallmarks of the book, too, the updated version of The Crime of the Century, is you've kept in touch with her all these years. There are pictures, there's amazing pictures of her and her family near the back of the book. And that is a kind of, to my mind, it's a triumph of the spirit. I mean, this woman has not been a public figure, and she's hasn't talked to everybody, and she hasn't given a ton of interviews except to you. Could you possibly say now, Bill Martin, that she is happy?
She's a very, very happy woman. She always has been. But she does have occasional nightmares. Ugh. She had them much more frequently during Speck's lifetime because she feared he would escape and kill her.
Ugh.
Once she was convinced he was dead, they subsided. But I can tell you, I spoke with her on July 14th, and she said that she was very sad and lonely.
Ugh.
Because she missed her classmates and roommates.
From 50 years ago.
Very much so.
She's incredibly courageous, and the addition to the new paperback edition of The Crime of the Century is at once heartbreaking but heartwarming too. Do you know what I mean? The thing about it too that I remembered is she's still having nightmares. One of the bravest things, and I'm sure you'll agree, is she was terrified of this man, but she got up in that courtroom, didn't she, and walked over to him and pointed him out.
It was the most dramatic moment that I have ever seen or heard of in a courtroom. And I was probably more stunned than anybody else that she did it. The night before she was to testify, we took her to the courthouse just to show her where she would sit and feel comfortable with the layout of the room. And the witness stand was a chair two steps up from the courtroom floor where there was a door with a latch that she would close once she sat down. And when I asked her the standard question, do you see in the courtroom today the man who came to your bedroom door on the night of July 14th, 1966, with a gun and a knife? Point him out.
Ugh.
And I had expected her to say, the man with the pockmarked face
sitting at that table or something, yeah.
And to my amazement, she stood up, unlatched the door, stepped down the two steps, and walked very steadily across the entire courtroom to the defense counsel table, walked within 2 inches of Speck's forehead, took her finger, pointed it at his forehead, and said unshakably, "This is the man."
Well, the courtroom must have been just hushed.
Well, the press was
loud as
excited
usual.
Excited
yeah.
that they wanted to get to the phones immediately, but Judge Passion, the trial judge, instantly restored order, and she went back to the stand and resumed what was actually 2 days of testimony.
Mm. Just before we take a break, and Bill Martin's going to be on this whole hour, and I think you should go out and buy as soon as possible The Crime of the Century, Richard Speck and the Murders That Shocked a Nation. There was some initial thought that Speck might try to plead insanity or something, right?
Very much so. We thought it was the most common expected defense in that kind of crime. Plus, his lawyer suggested that we have an impartial panel of 6 psychiatrists who could pick all the subalterns they needed to do a comprehensive evaluation as to A, was he fit to stand trial, and B, was he sane at the time of the murders?
Oh, man. It is a remarkable story, ladies and gentlemen. The Crime of the Century. We'll be back then. We'll carry on with Bill Martin. And I'm talking to Bill Martin, the lawyer, distinguished attorney, the prosecutor of Richard Speck, and also a great writer. The new edition of the book, Crime of the Century, comes with a postscript by William Kunkel. If you don't know that name, also a legendary name in the Chicago legal community. He was the chief prosecutor of a fellow named John Wayne Gacy. He was, Bill, I know Bill, actually played golf with Bill a couple times. He writes in here, in addition to saying what a spellbinding book you have written, he writes that the problem of dealing with a frenzied media was identical in the Gacy case and the Speck case, and solved the same way. Neither case was turned into a media circus nor sensationalized because the prosecutors kept their mouths shut. Was that hard for you to do, Bill, or you felt it was absolutely necessary?
No, after a while I thought no comment was my middle name. Not hard at all.
And she was, Corazon, there were you know, magazines and book publishers after her, and she, too, decided no. And there was big money on the table, I would think, and she decided she is not going to tell this story. And in your case, Speck was, as we all know, convicted on April 15th, 1967. The jury, it must be a great thing for a lawyer to have a jury deliberate for only 49 minutes. You nothing worried you when that jury went out to deliberate, would you? There's no way, or was there? You know, there's always.
You can always be one.
That's right.
That can hang a jury.
Yeah. Were you worried or not?
Sure, I was worried. And we went to lunch and we ordered it. And before it came, the clerk called and said the jury was back
And that was
a verdict.
That was a good sign to you, was it not?
That was a very good sign.
How did you, Bill Martin, how did you, when you're on a case like this, you're devoting all, virtually all of your energy and every, and all of your time to this case. How did you unwind?
Talking with my colleagues and the policemen, we were that kind of a team that, believe it or not, there were no egos.
I know.
There was nobody that was trying to one-up anybody else. We were all together in it, and we were all equal in it. And the way I unwound was just talking to Jim Zagel, George Murtaugh, the police officers, and talking about the case constantly.
Did you at the time, it was, and maybe you and I can both try to remind listeners that this was still a relative time, mid-60s, a relative time of innocence, especially in a city. You did not expect or, you know, the Schuessler kids, Grimes girl, but people left their doors open. And that this case changed all that, didn't it, Bill Martin?
It shattered our innocence because we realized there were walking amongst us monsters who were not identified. They didn't wear horns. You didn't know they were monsters until they struck, as Speck struck.
As you interviewed him, and one of the another hallmark of this book is you do a pretty thorough job of explaining who Speck was, where he came from, what kind of creature this was. You had prosecuted murder cases before this. You prosecuted some after. What makes Speck unique?
The man had not a single redeeming social or any kind of personal attribute that had goodness. He was the personification of evil. He was a portrait of evil. The man, when he confessed in Stateville to other inmates to generate money for them to hire lawyers, the way in which he confessed turned my stomach in a way that nothing else in that case ever did.
Well, you write, again, this is all stuff that is updated, call it a sick parody of 60 Minutes, but one of the new chapters in the book written by my guest Bill Martin and Dennis Brio is part six, A Portrait of Evil, Speck's Confession. You were shown that tape by the legendary broadcaster Bill Curtis, and I'm sure people remember when he had it on, I can't remember, was it
A&E?
A&E. And then they played it on Channel 2 News when Bill was there. It's one of the most grotesque videos I've ever seen. Did you think the same?
It is the most grotesque video I've ever seen. And after doing what Bill wanted, which was to identify Speck for certain, and when we were finished with it, I couldn't wait to get into the fresh air and stop shaking from being in the presence of such horrific, inhumane evil.
It was also something like out of a, he had grown breasts, and he was, it is still one of the most chilling things I have ever seen. I know this is a lousy question. You don't ever dream or have nightmares about Speck, do you?
Fortunately, no. I usually sleep like a rock.
Well, that's good, but you feel for this. Have you, Mrs. Amaro, that's not her new name, but you've kept in touch. Would you talk with her with any frequency over all these 50 years? Check up on her?
Yes. Yes, just because she wanted to stay in touch, too, because she was remarkably grateful for four police officers who guarded her for 8 months, 48 hours on, 48 off, and they became like a family. And she really was treated like a member of their families. They took her picking apples, getting all kinds of Oriental food in Chinatown.
And sort of making her life as normal as they possibly could, right?
Taught her to play penny-for-penny poker, which she still does today.
Does she? Oh, wow.
She lives in Nevada in the winters.
Uh-huh.
And she goes to casinos and plays the same game the police taught her. And they used to cheat and let her win.
Well, good for them. I mean, they did. I mean, everybody involved in that case realized what a horrific, horrific thing it was. Did the press bug you? I mean, I cannot even imagine. I don't know if you can. What it would be like for this case now with the proliferation of media and cell phones and Twitter accounts and all this stuff. And in some ways, you are probably lucky that this happened 50 years ago. It would be impossible now, don't you think?
We took an awful lot of precautions of avoiding any wiretapping by media. We swept all the phones of the defense, the judge, ourselves regularly. Nobody talked. I'm not so sure the case would be tried differently today than it was in 1967.
Yeah. You, at the time, even after the trial, you too were approached by many people saying, hey, why don't you write a book about this? You needed to wait, did you not?
One of our concerns was anything in a book could be potentially utilized by specs appellate lawyers to claim reversible error in the trial. And we didn't want to give him that kind of an edge. Whenever I went and made speeches about the case to law schools
Sure.
and prosecutors, one of the public defenders followed me constantly with a tape recorder. And I knew that. And I was extremely careful. But we had been extremely careful throughout the entire trial.
Yeah, I'll bet.
To make sure that this was the fairest, most error-free trial that any criminal defendant in the United States had ever gotten.
Yeah.
And we believe it was.
It was getting a lot of national attention from national press, too, was it not?
Yes.
I'm going to ask you, Bill Martin, and I, ladies and gentlemen, I cannot tell you what a compelling read this is, and it's not scary, because I was scared enough in 1966, as all of us were, and my mother started locking the doors, and everybody I was growing up with in Old Town started locking the doors. This, in many ways, I see this book, Bill, before I take a break, I see this book as a kind of, it's a memorial of sorts to the eight nurses who were slain. Is that the way? Does it feel that way to you, too?
That was one of the purposes of the book, is to memorialize not only the remarkable courage of Corazon Amaral, but her love for her roommates, but also their courage. And there was a wonderful play produced back in 1999 by a wonderful playwright, Rebecca Gilman,
oh, yeah.
called The Crime of the Century, taken from the book, in which Speck doesn't have a speaking line. And it's told through the mouths of each of the nurses.
I remember the show.
And what their plans were for life.
And what their dreams were for life.
And that play hits you like a locomotive.
Well, the book hits you like a locomotive, too. We're going to take a short break. I'm going to come back and talk a little bit more to Bill Martin. And you should buy the book, The Crime of the Century, Richard Speck and the Murders That Shocked a Nation. It will it's a heroic tale of one woman, too. Believe me, her sort of triumph over unspeakable horror. We'll be right back. A few minutes ago, with Bill Martin, who I have never met before. We have a number of mutual friends, including Bill Kunkel, who's done a stunning job of adding a chapter at the end of the book. Bill Kunkel, who was a student of Bill Martin's, was the lead prosecutor on the John Wayne Gacy case, and he makes some fascinating comparisons between the two. And he also raves about this book, and I could not rave more about this book. You may think to yourself, well, who wants to read about Richard Speck? The book, in so many ways, honors the eight young nurses who were slaughtered by Speck, and honors Corazon Amaro, who survived and has a life. She may be haunted by nightmares, but she has a life, and a good life, too. How did, Bill, in the 5 minutes we have left, how did this case change you?
Actually, I don't really think it changed me at all.
Really?
I mean, it may sound kind of blasé, but we matured very quickly in the state's attorney's office under the great leaders we had. And you were thrown in and you either sank or swam.
Yeah.
And we tried a lot of big cases before this one, after this one. And this case itself was a very strong case.
Sure.
The hardest part of this case was all of the things that were occurring outside the courtroom, like the Filipino government trying to get Corazon back to the Philippines before the trial to be able to shake down the State Department. And it was the Marcos era.
Yeah.
And I had to deal with the consul general and the ambassador.
You guys took that guy out to dinner and kind of got it done over dinner, didn't you? You got him out of your hair.
Yeah. And, they didn't teach us that when we worked at 11th and State, eating a hot dog for lunch
to
do international diplomacy. But somehow we were able to back everybody off because nobody wanted to be fronting for Speck.
Yeah.
And that helped us immensely. And the people who helped us, both police, prosecutors, and civilians, were remarkable.
And even some journalists. There were some journalists who did some work
for
you.
Oh, sure.
There's an interesting part of the book. An old guy I used to know, my father used to work with, who did some sort of, Bob Ellison did some kind of interesting undercover work for you.
A tremendous, tremendous job of important.
And cops worked on their off days, and, I mean, everybody came together for this, to put this monster away.
Absolutely.
And you, more than anybody, I know you don't like to take the full responsibility for it, but you have kept in touch with Corazon Amaro for 50 years. And she may still have nightmares, Bill Martin, but she is, and she comes off in this book, and you and Dennis do agree, she comes off as one of the bravest, most courageous human beings you will meet between the pages of a book. And she's real.
She's very real, and it's all very real.
Have you seen her? Have you had the chance to see her?
Not in several years. Yeah. Last time I saw her, she was here and appeared on Oprah's show. And the only reason that Oprah got her here was she reunited her with the police officers who had guarded her. And she was so happy to see them, she was willing to come.
That's great. That's great. You eventually would go into private practice, and you enjoyed that, right? And teaching, too. You must be. I've never been a law student, but you must be a great teacher because you've had an effect on – every time I mention your name to some lawyer friend of mine, I'll tell you this. I admire you simply as an author because we've never had a legal problem together. But I got to tell you, Bill Martin, you are roundly admired by the legal community in Chicago, and that must make you proud.
Well, that's very nice to hear, and I appreciate it very much. And there's a lot of other people in that case that didn't get the credit they deserved, where I did, and I always felt somewhat bad about that.
Now, how many kids do you have? One of your sons is in here now reading a fabulous book. I won't tell you what it is because I want you to buy The Crime of the Century. Did any of your other kids become lawyers?
Two became lawyers, and one is now a judge.
Okay, well, I can see how you would have inspired them. Bill Martin, it is a pleasure to meet you. I want to thank Terry Lavin for, who is now a judge, too, who's a pretty decent lawyer when he was a lawyer, but he's a pretty good judge now for introducing us. And I know I read the book when it first came out in 95, and you waited until after Speck had died so he couldn't use anything in here to go back to court or get another trial. And I read it again, and it is so much better. Bill Kunkel's thing is great, and your take on Richard Speck is great, and it is wonderful to see those pictures of Corazon Amaral with her family. Bill Martin, you're my, I don't know if you still practice?
Yes.
Okay. I'm telling you right now, if I get in any kind of legal problem of any kind, I'm coming to you.
Well, you won't, so you don't have to worry.
Thanks, Bill. It's a pleasure to meet you. Once again, the book is The Crime of the Century, Richard Speck and the Murders That Shocked the Nation, written by Dennis Brio and William J. Martin, with an postscript by Bill Kunkel, a pretty good golfer and the chief prosecutor of John Wayne Gacy. It also, for those of it changed the lives, I am pretty certain, of every single person who lives in the city of Chicago. We'll be right back.